Jimmy Dura, host of All Things Veterinary, a podcast that connects and unites the animal health community with ideas and innovation, topics to inspire you and energize your day. Hello and welcome to another episode of the All Things Veterinary podcast. Today we've got a couple special guests, Dr. Shane Whitaker and Chris Weaver, and we'll be discussing advanced imaging. But before we get into the discussion, I just wanted to take a quick minute and say how much we've appreciated all the support, feedback, and comments we've gotten with the podcast. Please continue to keep your ideas, recommendations for guests, and topics you'd like to dive further into. We love the feedback, and please be so kind and leave us a 5-star rating and review and a follow. Those comments really help. So, okay, welcome our guests, Dr. Shane Whitaker and Chris Weaver. Both work for Patterson on the advanced imaging team, if you will. And guys, we're so appreciative and excited to have you on the podcast for a discussion today. And I think it'd be best if I let you guys kind of introduce yourselves. So Dr. Shane Whitaker, will you kick us off, please, sir?
So I graduated from veterinary school in 2000. And my intention from the time I started veterinary school was to graduate and be a boarded surgeon. And so that was my dream, my goal. And somewhere in my senior year of vet school, I ended up meeting a man who became my eventual business partner. And he kind of talked me into coming to work for him. He's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And so, you know, my plan was to go to work for him for a year or so and then go back and do a surgery residency and be a surgeon. When I got to the practice, I stayed for a little while. I learned, man, this practice had a very unique business model. He was doing a lot of high-level surgery, high-level diagnostics. I mean, just high-quality medicine. He had all the latest tools, equipment, but he had a fairly low, maybe even by some standards, really low price model. So it was affordable healthcare, but really high quality. To me, that was really intriguing. And so, you know, I ended up staying 3 or 4 years into that. I ended up buying half the practice, you know, and then we continued that business model. A couple of years down the road, I ended up going to a surgery conference, and Chris Weaver was there along with another doctor. And he was, this other doctor had bought a CT and he was using it in general practice. And so as I picked his brain a little bit and my wheel started turning, you know, and I thought, maybe I can see a road to where a general practitioner could pay for a CT. And so I just jumped in with both feet, bought a CT, figured it out. And we've been on that road for the last 8-9 years.
That's a really great story. Let me just ask you to kind of keep going down the road, if you will. So once you fully adopted CT and just, you know, other kind of modalities in your practice, you really dove in and got, I want to say, all in. And then you kept getting asked by the Patterson team and other folks to speak about it to general practitioners. And eventually it's led you to now full time. This is what you do, is support and help install and train clinics once they've adopted this type of equipment. Is that right?
You know, when it came time for me to start thinking about what am I going to do after practice, that decision came a little sooner than I thought, just because this opportunity was available. So, you know, I tell people a lot of times like this, you know, if I can go to my practice every day and I can do a scan for somebody for a really reasonable price, and my practice is more than a reasonable price, it's almost absurd how cheap we've made it. If I can do that and it works out, owners go home happy, that's a really rewarding experience for me. But if I can go, when Chris sells a CT, if I can go to that practice and train that staff and those doctors how to run that CT and do the CT, and then we get into some surgical stuff, if I can train that practice, that's even more rewarding, because then I kind of like on the back end get the benefit of all the things that they do, right? So, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, it's not to be egotistical, I don't mean it in that way, but, you know, they wouldn't be there without us, right? So, and to be able to go into a practice and train them to do those things, I kind of get the benefit of all the future of what they're doing. And that's just, to me, that's even more rewarding than what I was doing in practice.
Well, that's such a neat story. And Chris Weaver, sir, welcome in. If you'll
Thank
also
you.
give us a background for you and kind of describe once we get to it your current role today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us. We're really excited to be here. And so, man, my background, I just followed my curiosities in life. You know, when I went to school, I knew I either wanted to do computer engineering or go to vet school. Two things that I liked, love dogs, really good with computers. That was my path. And so got a job at a vet clinic and went to school. First clinic was a spay and neuter clinic at a humane society. Really humble entry into the vet clinic, working in the kennel, seeing this high volume, cheap spay and neuter as many animals as you can, you know, a couple of days a week. You know, it was different and I liked it. I loved working with the patients. There were no owners back then to talk to, but you know, it got me in the door. And so I started there, went to a very traditional, ultra rural family practice where, you know, husband was the vet, mom was the manager, kids worked the front desk. So that got me into actual private medicine, private practice. And it was fun. You know, it was a great place to start, slower pace. And so from there, it was an eight doctor, busy general practice in a big city with multiple satellite clinics. You know, I learned a lot there. You know, from there, it was an emergency clinic, did some emergency work. Didn't like the hours, but the work was fun and exciting. And you see different cases. And from there, the last place I worked at, it was a huge hybrid specialty center, GP and specialty center. We had three general practice doctors, a surgeon, an internist, and an oncologist. And so it was a great clinic to see both sides working together. It was in a really high income area in Phoenix here, which is neat because, man, when money's not an object for people, you really get to see the limits of where medicine can go. You know, like I started in a rural humane society, go to there, and it's like, man, this is really what's available out there. This is what they're doing at universities. This is, you know, what the limits are when money really isn't an option or money isn't a factor. And so at that clinic, it's kind of where all my experience converged. You know, we bought a CT from Patterson, the first one we ever sold. I took to it really quickly. I love computers. Imaging today is, like it or not, is there's a big part of it's technology and computer based, you know, computed tomography. It's right in the title. I was studying anatomy, and again, imaging, clinically speaking, is mostly anatomy, 90% anatomy. So it was like I got to operate the CT, understood how it worked. I got to follow cases start to finish because I was experienced enough as a tech and a practice leader that you could follow the cases and really understand where CT played a role, understand where the images played a role, what the radiologists and what our doctors were looking at. So, you know, everything kind of converged there. And so they created the position. My territory manager, you know, she made the introductions, gave me a reference, and that's when I joined Patterson. And so early on, my role was training. You know, we would and sales support, you know, but mostly training. We'd sell a CT and fly to the clinic, do a couple of days of on-site training with the doctors, with the techs, and we've just grown and adapted from there.
Love it, Chris. Thank you. And so your role every day, full time, kind of like Dr. Whitaker, but you've been doing it for, I mean, several, over 10 years at this point. Is that
Yeah, I
fair?
was a tech for 11 years, and I've been doing this for 10 years.
Okay. And so your every day is supporting, servicing the sales effort after the sale, you know, ongoing support of a veterinary hospital once they acquire one of these types of pieces of equipment, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as we have a clinic that says, you know, man, I'm kind of interested in CT, it's jump on a call, talk through what you can use it for, what you can't, what system might be a good fit. You know, get Shane involved, get the right people involved to make sure everybody feels secure and excited about such a, you know, big purchase.
That's neat. Thank you both for giving us a descriptive background. I think it's really neat to hear both of y'all's stories, and that's what both of you said in different ways and terms is partly why I just love this industry. You know, the other thing you described, Chris, all the different types of clinics, that's also what's just, there's so many right ways to practice veterinary medicine
Yeah.
for the community, for the vet, for the And it's so it, there's no one right way. And for today's conversation, I want to invite our listeners to open their minds and just kind of think for a minute. We're going to talk economics, but let's just think for a minute about this type of technology and what it would be like in your practice when, you know, a lot of folks, they wouldn't even consider it maybe. All right, we'll pause there. Thank you all for your backgrounds. Chris, can you just to really simply kind of lay out, you know, for the purposes of today's conversation, when we're describing advanced imaging, what does that refer to?
Yeah, you know, when you say advanced imaging, typically it's CT, MRI, fluoroscopy, C-arm, and then your, you know, ultra advanced gamma cameras, PET scans, those kinds of things. But for the most part, I mean, CT is the backbone and the majority of what we do.
Okay, so. Thank you for that. Can both you or one of you kind of start describing, you know, the benefits of having one of these in your hospital?
So we'll start with the obvious one for a doctor, right? Financial, right? So why would you want a CT in your practice? I mean, I'll make a statement that most people won't believe unless they actually looked at the numbers, but outside of an exam room in my practice, I've never had anything in my practice outperform my CT financially. And that goes across the board to anything other than an exam room. You know, our CT, whatever that was, how many ever years ago that was $240,000+. And we literally paid that off. And I'm not just talking about in gross revenue. I'm talking about we actually paid it off with profit in about 18 months. This is at the time was a two at sometimes three doctor GP that was really low cost. You know, when we first got started in this, you know, one of the big things that I told Chris, I was like, look, we settled on $250. That's what we charge for a CT. I raised the price of my dental prophy by $60. And I just didn't give anybody an option. One, I knew it was better medicine. I knew nobody's going to decline a CT if you give them the option of, hey, you want us to take some x-rays of your dog's head or do you want us to do a CT? Everybody would choose it anyway. So I just didn't give anybody an option. I raised the price of it by $60. And then we charged $250 for a regular CT. And that included anesthesia. You know, part of this whole idea of me talking to Chris about this, I was like, look, man, if I can pay for my CT and this, you know, I mean, this conversation happened before I paid it off, but it was already happening, you know, a couple months in. If I can do this charging $250, I think anybody can do this. Like, I think every practice in America could probably do this because nobody else is going to charge $250. You know, so from a financial point of view, it just in general practice outperforms everything if you use it. You know, I tell people a lot of times, you know, we're all kind of already used to the specialty practice or the emergency practice down the road having a CT. That's been really common for a while. But still in GP, people think it just doesn't make sense for GP. When I tell people all the time, a specialty practice, an emergency practice, they have to have a CT. They just need it. And a general practitioner wants it because that's where the real money is. It makes a lot more money in general practice.
And Shane, can I jump in here? I wanted to add, man, my last clinic was a hybrid GP specialty clinic, three GP doctors. Every 2 weeks, we had an admin meeting where we went over revenue, you know, divisions, where money was coming in from. Our GP doctors fed that CT more than our surgeon, internist, and oncologist combined. It wasn't even close. I mean, that is where we made the majority of our income and did the majority of our cases came from the GP docs.
Mentality or the thought process is starting to turn, but that's been a sticking point for a long time as people just weren't able to see how does CT fit into general practice. I think we've crossed that hurdle now. So we have the answers. It's just a matter of getting those answers out there so people can see it. So financially, diagnostically, all right. I mean, I think this one is more intuitive for the most part than some of the other things. I mean, everybody knows CT is a high powered diagnostic tool, right? You know, if you ask any general practitioner in the country, most of them are going to say, sure, if I could afford it, I'd want one because it's a very powerful diagnostic tool. The things that people don't really understand are with new technologies, most significantly for general practice is the advent of flat panel CT, sometimes called cone beam CT. I like flat panel better. I think it's a better description of what's actually going on there. But with flat panel CT, we get really, really high resolution pictures. So like the newest Nutome flat panel images at 0.09 millimeters, so 90 microns. That's incredible. You know, if you go to your human hospital and look at their multi-slice CT scanner, I mean, even the best of those will image at 300 microns, most of them 600 microns. And so, you know, with these flat panel CTs, we're imaging at 90 microns, which is really, really, I mean, it's really, really fine detail. And what that opens up for us is the ability to image teeth, because you can't really do a good job of imaging teeth with a multi-slice CT scanner, and bones, some really small things. So in dogs, we see fragmented coronoid process in the elbow, and some of those fractures can be half a millimeter or smaller and cause a dog to be lame. You know, I mean, if you're not imaging smaller than half a millimeter, you're not going to see those things. You know, I mean, it does open up, it opens up a lot of possibilities for the general practitioners that just really weren't available before. You know, with the ability to do dental scans, before I bought my CT, we were doing full mouth dental x-rays on every patient. I mean, we felt like that was the best thing, you know, the best thing. So that's what we did. But then when we got, you know, our technicians and myself were still learning. We'd had dental x-ray for about a year, and we were still learning to do it, but you know, I felt like we were getting pretty good at it. Maybe we could do a big dog in 25 minutes or so. But then when we got our CT, we realized that 25 minutes went to an 18 second scan with, you know, about a 1 minute reconstruction time, and then 2 or 3 minutes for me to chart the teeth. So that entire process went from 25 minutes for pictures, 5 minutes for charting, down to a total of about 5 minutes. In a general practice that's busy, 20 minutes on every single dental is huge over a long period of time. I mean, it is, any practice manager will tell you that kind of time savings is extremely valuable. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that really doesn't even get put into an ROI for a CT, right? I can measure how much did I make on dentals, how much did I make on extractions, biopsies, you know, what kind of surgeries did it lead to? Sometimes you get a little bit far out. You know, I did a CT and then 6 months later that turned into a surgery. Well, I can measure all that, but it's really hard to measure, you know, what did I do with the extra 2 hours in my day that I didn't do taking x-rays, you know, of teeth. What did I do with that 2 hours? Well, I guarantee you, in a busy practice, we're not sitting around doing nothing for that 2 hours. We're using that 2 hours to do something else. That's really hard to measure. So, you know, I mean, the financial benefit of it even goes beyond, you know, what we normally think of. And then, you know, when we do dental CT, you know, not only are we getting the teeth, but we're getting the whole head of the dog, and the number of things that we find that are ancillary issues, like nasal tumors, you know, nasal disease, middle ear disease, you know, all these other things that end up being treatable or leading to further diagnostic things. They just adds to the level of the quality of medicine that you're practicing, and it adds to your bottom line. You're just doing more stuff. So, you know, I mean, diagnostically, it's also a big thing. And then, you know, I would say from a client point of view, you know, we're in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's a small town. I mean, it's getting bigger, but a small town. Now, we have 3 emergency clinics in Chattanooga. All 3 of them have CT. We're the only general practice that has one. We have people coming from states away, multiple states away, to get things. Now, we also do things like, we'd either do it other advanced things, laparoscopic surgery, arthroscopy, that kind of stuff that nobody else kind of general practice does around too. But we'll have people coming from multiple states away to get CTs and surgical stuff. One, it's less expensive. Two, you know, we're not having to wait 3-4 weeks to get into a specialist because we have availability to do it. Also, people just, you know, you want to think that you were well-respected before you had a CT, and I'm sure we were. But when people see things like a CT, it goes beyond, right, telling somebody, hey, I got a new ultrasound machine. Okay, that's nice, right? We know it. It elevates the level of our medicine when we get a nice new quality ultrasound machine. We know it. But clients look at that and they say, oh, that's nice. But you tell them you got a CT machine, or you show it to them, they look at that as a whole different thing. They're just looking at you as a different practice at that point. You know, and then, and then the last thing I'll say about, you know, why a doctor would want a CT, practice stability. I can't even tell you how the culture, we had a good culture in my practice. I don't mean to paint it in a bad light. We had a good culture already in my practice, but the culture in my practice just changed. You know, I always had a struggle with our business model being high quality medicine, but also low cost at the same time. That low cost always threw a monkey wrench into my staff's culture, right? Because they had a really hard time getting past the fact that we're still low cost, right? Because it just has a stigma to it. You know, it shouldn't have been, you know, we're practicing high quality medicine, doing things nobody else does, or at least no other general practices do, but it still was hard for them to get over. But man, that CT changed that in a big way. Our staff started seeing what we're doing with the CT. They started seeing how impressed our clients were with the CT. They started seeing how impressed the doctors were with it. And it just changed the whole culture, you know. And then about the time that we bought our CT, we were looking for more doctors. You know, there was 2.5 of us there at the time, and we really needed to be a 5-doctor practice. I mean, it was busy. And so we were looking for more doctors. And that's about the time we bought that. And there is no doubt in my mind, just knowing that the conversations that I had with our doctor applicants, that CT played a huge part in what doctors we were able to get. You know, I don't know that I'm gonna sit here and say it was the factor, but it definitely played into it. I mean, laparoscopic surgery, you know, and CT, new graduates, they want the cool stuff. You know, they want the ability, even if they don't understand it all, they want the ability to be able to practice the medicine that they want to practice.
Shane, that is awesome. I wrote down, I want to kick it to Chris for a minute to add into this, but I wrote down several things that, I mean, it's like you said, if when things are to try and qualify, I wrote down the recruiting aspect around this discussion, which you just alluded to, efficiency in the practice. And those are, man, they're hard to measure and more important today and relevant. And they have been for the last several years, and that's going to continue to be relevant for the next several years. You know, your 25-minute large dog, full mouth dental radiography, that might even be in some practices, a lot of times that'll fall on one technician who's really good at that. Or, you know, think about how this opens that up as well to the whole team. And then I wrote down reputation. And marketing, and you know, with pet owners as well as other professionals. I mean, those are things that you just kind of touched on. That's like above and beyond, you know, the diagnostics and the, you know, the patient care, if you will, which is awesome. So, Chris, you have anything to add on this in that realm?
Yeah, I've got a couple things I was thinking about while Shane was talking. You know, he went into the culture and the pride maybe his techs took into his practice. And you know, I see it when we go to do training. I see it all over the place. When we do training, you see technicians say things like, man, we have a CT now, or they get so much more engaged in wanting to learn because it's such a cool thing. I mean, how many people have hands-on experience with a CT in the world? And to Shane's point, people, you know, in the medical veterinary community want it. And so I think that's neat. Even at trade shows, you know, we'll talk to a lot of people, come up to us at trade shows. We stand next to a big CT. And they come up and you can tell the ones that have CT are proud to say they have CT. You know, it's a really neat thing that promotes that kind of thing and personal development. I mean, I have seen from my own experience vets and techs buying or using their new systems, and it just opens up a new avenue of learning and growth where it's like, man, I've been maybe a little stagnant in my career, or maybe I'm not stagnant, but this is the next thing I want to learn. I mean, it opens up more advanced anatomy and physiology and surgery and helps you take on more advanced cases. And it just opens the door to other things that I think, you know, that's important. Vet school and the dynamic between being in school and going out of school are just different today. And taking tools like this to help learn and grow is really important.
Can I insert one thing before you continue that, again, it's just worth highlighting like 3 times, you know, recruiting, mentorship, new grads coming out of school. We're all looking for those in new grads, I mean, what you also described, I remember when starting, you know, kind of first back in when I was getting into the industry, the pride that one spoke of having digital x-ray, you know, this is reminding me of that, and here it is today. That's common. It's not common to have film or not x-ray at all. That's exactly what you're describing, where we are today and where we're going to continue to be. And I think perhaps foreshadowing what it'll be like, you know, in several years from now when we look back at kind of this point in the evolution. But man, I'm in clinics every day, and it's, we're all talking about recruiting and attracting, you know, DVMs and associates and adding more, but attracting a technician like a young Chris Weaver, or these talented technicians that want they want cool things. They want to learn new things. They want to work in a practice that has pieces of equipment like this and these technologies because they want to continue to advance their career. And it's very challenging to recruit and find those types of technicians for many reasons. But this is one of those, like kind of you alluded to in your market specifically, Shane, of people know these types of things when these types of things come to town. This is talk worthy, and that a lot of times helps maybe get a phone call from a technician who's looking to continue, you know, looking for something else. Anyway, sorry, Chris, back to you.
That's good. The other thing I wanted to point on was client experience, because we talk a lot from the vet and the clinic's perspective about needing to earn revenue to pay for it, wanting to grow as a veterinarian and as a business. But from a client perspective, you know, you go to a clinic and the doctor tells you you need a CT scan for your pet. That's a big deal. I mean, I can guarantee most people are going to think, man, that's expensive. Two, now I got to go to another vet clinic, another appointment, you know, get my dog or cat back in the car and go to another hospital. And who knows when I'm going to be able to do that. And it kind of solves all three of those things. You can stay at the own practice, usually do it same day, next day, drop off, whatever the deal is. So it's less trips out and it's typically cheaper. GPs don't tend to charge, you know, $3,200 for a CT. Some of that's just a different model, different market, different systems, even different types of CTs. But the truth is, not only does it help the doctor keep the revenue in-house, keep the case in-house, but man, now that pet doesn't have to go to multiple clinics, multiple appointments. The more people you involve, the more likely things can get missed. And trying to keep everything in one place is really important.
The All Things Veterinary Podcast is sponsored by Patterson Veterinary, supplier of products, equipment, software, services, and essentials for your practice. Patterson goes the extra mile to make sure you get what you need quickly, develops ways to help your practice run a little better, and backs it all with legendary customer service. Find All Things Veterinary at PattersonVet.com. Can you, Chris and Shane, you know, there's kind of like what we call the big six, if you will, kind of areas for treatment. We're, you know, some of these can get pretty in depth, but can we just kind of hit the high notes on some of those?
Yeah. So I think I'll start my, you know, working in that clinic with three GP doctors and a few specialties. I didn't know I was a technician. I didn't go to vet school. I didn't, you know, set out to learn about CT. So this is all kind of organic experience where the big six came from. Number one was dentistry, whole mouth dental imaging in 18 seconds. You know, number two, sinuses. Number three, ears, middle and outer ear infections, backs, thorax, and orthopedics. You know, those were probably the big six that there's infinite one-offs, but those are always the six that are kind of the backbone of CT. And you have a dachshund that has a bad back, they get a CT. You have a dog limping on its front leg, they get a CT. Skip x-rays even, go right to CT. Yeah, you'll never need to take a skull x-ray again for middle ears or sinuses. So, I mean, that's what developed out of our practice. And I think Shane would probably agree that that's where it fit in his too.
Yeah, so I was just, while you're talking about that, looking at a list that one of the radiologists that we work with a good bit had put together, a list of just applications for CT in general. And I was just, while you were doing that, counting the things on this list, he's listed here, and this is definitely not all inclusive, but he's listed here 69 different things that, you know, CT, and this is really intended for GP. Like, there are some really high level stuff that you can do with CT that I'm probably never even going to think about. I mean, your cardiologist is going to want to do angiography, and you know, your oncologists are going to do, you know, oncology,
radiation oncology.
Oncology planning and all that stuff. CT will do all that stuff, but that's not included on this list. So this is just 69 things Dr. Whitaker can do in his practice with his CT. It's a huge list of things. You know, I mean, and you think about, you know, my practice, you know, when I retired in July, it was a four doctor practice. And it was a really, really rare day when we didn't use our CT. You know, I mean, even without the dentistry stuff, it was a rare day. We didn't use it for something. I used it a lot for tumor margins, fracture planning, you know, IBDD, a dog's going to get back surgery. I mean, the big six is a big six for a reason, because it's the biggest, the things you do the most, but the list is huge of the things that you can do with it.
Shane, can you speak to, as a general practitioner, you know, your the adoption and the kind of the thought of, okay, what am I going to do with this, which we're covering, but then the next question is, then what? You know, maybe some veterinarians out there maybe are hesitant because of not then, you know, taking the next step on the treatment or the surgery, or I mean, maybe speaking to, you know, some of that learning curve of one, interpreting the images, and then two, you know, then the next steps after that. And
well, there's kind of two parts to that, right? There's a diagnostic part, practice philosophy part, and then there's a financial part to that. I think I'll talk about the financial part first, because it's kind of the easiest. Like, for a practice like mine, where our intent was to capture everything we could capture in that practice, so I didn't want my clients to have to go somewhere else to get the treatment they wanted. Well, I knew that wasn't what they wanted, and it wasn't what I wanted. So we were trying to capture everything we could capture. So I invested my entire professional life into learning surgeries. I wanted to do every surgical procedure I could possibly do for my clients. Personally, I just enjoyed doing it. And, you know, it's what we wanted for our practice. So we tried to capture everything. Now, with that business model, it allows you to do what we did and make your CT scans really inexpensive. So we started out charging $250 for CT. And I was able to do that because I knew on the back end, I was going to get to do back surgeries and ear surgeries and biopsies and more extractions and all the things that we're going to find with that CT. I was going to get to do the work on those things. And so it was going to lead to more revenue. You know, if you don't have that practice model, or you don't want to adopt that practice model where you still really want to refer things out, you can still do it. It might not allow you to do it for $250 a scan, but you can still do it for considerably less than what your specialty practice down the road charges. And then you still get the benefit of the diagnostics. You know, I mean, now we touched on it a little bit, but the ancillary issues that you find with CT will blow your mind. I mean, I know you've been in a lot of practice. You've seen a lot of x-rays. You've seen a lot of things. And, you know, I mean, you've seen and heard the story of somebody take an x-ray and find something they weren't expecting. That is an exponential. I mean, the times that happens with CT is exponential compared to x-ray. It just happens all the time. I mean, it's such a powerful diagnostic tool. It almost seems like it doesn't matter what you're looking for. You'll find what you're looking for and then something else. I mean, it's just that good at diagnosing things.
Well, thank you. I mean, you answered my question exactly. Is, you know, even if, you know, you're ruling in, you're ruling out, it's more diagnostics, it's more information, and there's still choices on what you do with the information, whether that's something you're comfortable with and you're, you know, what you're offering at your hospital, or if you need to send them somewhere to get it. Just want to touch on other kind of maybe misconceptions or things, you know, in your conversations with veterinarians at trade shows or wherever that may be. What other questions do you get, or things that you uncover that people maybe don't understand or are curious about with this modality?
I think the top three misconceptions that we run into are, obviously, number one is we can't afford it. There's no way to pay for it. You know, we've covered some of that today, and we can cover more, but that's number one. Number two is, I'm a GP. How on earth am I going to use this thing? You know, how am I going to make it work? It's a specialty thing. And number three is we don't have space. Like there's no room in our clinic for anything. We're a small practice. I mean, those are the three hurdles or obstacles or misconceptions that most people have to, make friends with in order to buy a CT. And so on all three fronts, we've talked a lot about CT in general practice, told you my experience, you know, in a hybrid specialty center, our GP doctors fed CT more than anybody. Shane's confirmed that, you know, hundreds of other vets being past the early adopter phase have proved that it's absolutely possible. And then from a financial perspective, it really, you know, there are multiple ways to make it work. You can do the referral model where you're going to charge your clients what you can charge them, what the market rate is, get the CT, hand them a Telerad report and send them on their way. I mean, that's a way to make things work. It's about relationships in your community and, you know, marketing and those kinds of things. There's also Shane's model where you don't charge a lot. You keep your patients in-house and your goal is to help the patient, help the client, generate the revenue, keep things in-house, or grow as a vet. You know, that opens up procedures that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And for space, I mean, that's kind of why Patterson and why I and we have grown and changed so much. We have CTs that are portable, that are on wheels, that are no bigger than, you know, 2 feet by 4 feet that you can wheel into an exam room and do a CT. You know, that's a possibility. We have CTs and trailers that you can park in the, in the parking lot and bring people out if your clinic just doesn't have space. We have CTs that take up, you know, a minimum of 8 by 10 feet. You know, that is not a lot of space to give for a CT. And then, of course, we have the really big ones that when you think CT, everybody thinks huge 20 by 20 room, lots of power, that whole deal. We definitely have those systems, but man, there are systems for everybody. We even have a CT you can wheel out to a horse barn and take a CT. I'm telling you, space and physical constraints or physical space in a hospital, there is an option for everybody.
That's great to debunk. Along those same lines, what about staff protection? And, you know, I'm sure you get those questions a lot. You know, do I have to lead line? Do I have to do this, do that? What does that look like?
Yeah, there depends on the system. Okay. There are CTs that don't require any additional shielding. I mean, number one, we always recommend protect your techs. Wear lead, if you're going to be in the room when the CT is firing, wear lead gowns, wear a thyroid shield, you know, protect yourself. It is radiation. But from a legal and state and city requirement perspective, we have CTs that are internally shielded, so they don't have any scatter radiation. The inside of the CTs are protected. We have systems that use low dose, but a fancy detector to generate images. And so they don't need lead shielding. They typically, it's just a drywall room, you know, and then we do have the bigger systems that give off a lot of radiation that need protection, that need 1/32nd inch lead drywall. But even that is not as big of a hurdle as people think. You know, lead drywall is not that expensive. You don't need to shield external walls, only interior walls. And that's only if it's drywall. You know, cinder block, brick, steel, any of those things don't need shielding, typically.
That's great. Well, I just want to thank you both again for your passion and for coming on and sharing some wisdom and knowledge with us today. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Jimmy.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. Thank you for listening. Join us for more ideas and inspiration on the next All Things Veterinary podcast.